opening the closing session of this conference, and it is our great privilege and pleasure to have here with us the president of the university, Dr. Donald O'Dowd, and also the mayor of North Slope Borough, Georgia Mowrock. I wish to thank them because I know that they are very busy and that the mayor left his whaling camp to come down to us to explain his problems and to participate at the end of this session. So I'm very grateful for this, and I would like right away to give him the floor. Mayor, it's up to you.
Thank you, Dr. Reed. Good afternoon, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. It is a pleasure for me, as a mayor of the North Slope Borough, to make a few comments regarding some of our views on the protection of the bowhead whale habitat. As many of you know, the North Slope Borough occupies most of the Alaskan Arctic, borders on both the Chukchi and the Beaufort Seas, and although very large in area, it is sparsely populated. Most of the full-time residents of the borough are Inupiat Eskimos, who have close links to the marine environment. As subsistence hunters, we have long turned to these ice-dominated waters for food, and our culture is closely tied to the hunt of various marine creatures, particularly the bowhead whale. The importance of the bowhead whale to our culture has already been mentioned by my fellow whaling captain, Mr. Lenny Lane, as presented by Suzanne Little, Executive Director of Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission, yesterday. Mr. Lane's comments regarding our hunt of the bowhead whale, the role of the whale in our culture, and the history of the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission should help many of you to better understand our feelings towards this great animal. The bowhead whale represents much more than just a subsistence food resource to the Inupiat people. Over the centuries, we have developed a kindred relationship with this great animal. The bowhead whale is the embodiment of our culture and serves as the integral part of our complex religious and symbolic associations. Our relationship with this important mammal has resulted in a familiarity with the whale that no other people possesses. Because of the centuries-long relationship, we have learned much on such things as the technology of ice movements and the habitats of the bowhead. This database alone, however, is insufficient in assessing the impacts of offshore oil exploration and development on the bowhead whale as it ranges from the Bering Sea to the Canadian Beaufort. We understand that development of our Arctic resources benefits the entire nation, but we must also remember that those who live in the Arctic will be the ones who must live with the resulting environmental impacts of this development for years and years to come. As Dr. Jonathan Motzenfeldt pointed out in his opening remarks to this conference, the advance of modern technology has opened up the Arctic region and exposed it to many risks. I concur with Dr. Motzenfeldt that only a continuously growing understanding of the Arctic can best mitigate the negative consequences of this modern technology and man's urge for development. Concerning the whale itself, it is well known that a major research effort has been conducted in this regard over the past several years. Much of this effort has focused on population studies conducted off Point Barrow and in the Canadian Beaufort Sea. I'm happy to say that the North Slope Borough has played a major role in the spring sensing program at Point Barrow. And as many of you realize, the 1985 census is now underway. I'm also pleased to note that the various population-related studies have been funded by a number of groups, including the North Slope Borough, the State of Alaska, National Marine Service, Fisheries Service, Bureau of Land Management, Minerals Management Service, Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Canadian government, and the oil and gas industry in both Alaska and Canada. Let us hope that research continues at least until we have estimates of population size and structure that are documented to the level that all parties can feel that their concerns have been addressed. Regarding the habitat of the bowhead whale, I feel that our knowledge is a much poorer state. Unfortunately, we have much more to learn about the northern seas in general, even though from the various presentations made at this conference, it is clear that we have significant knowledge about certain aspects and certain areas of these seas. Over the past 10 to 15 years, there's been a few major efforts to increase our level of knowledge of the Bering, the Chukchi, and the Bering Seas. One of the more prominent of these efforts was the Outer Continental Shelf Environmental Assessment Program conducted by the National Oceanic Administrative Administration. Unfortunately, OCSEP program is now a mere shadow of its former robust self. OCSEP rapid decline seems to be part of a general decline in the research of the United States Arctic. This unhealthy downward trend in Arctic research is of great concern to us and was a focus of my comments made on March 1 here at the university during the public meeting concerning Arctic research priorities and implementation of the Arctic Research and Policy Act. Not only are we concerned that the overall level of the United States Arctic research seem to be declining, we are also concerned that the proportion of this research being done by academic institutions seems to be waning. As many of you know, the closure of the Naval Arctic Research Laboratory in Barrow was a highly visible aspect of this downward trend in the United States Arctic research. Fortunately, the laboratory has reopened as Utqiagvik Inupiat Corporation, NARL, and let us all hope that it can again serve as a focus for scientific study in the Arctic. With the preceding comments as background information, let me now turn to a brief discussion of the need to protect the habitat of the bowhead whale. It is common knowledge that offshore industrial activity is increasing in several parts of the bowhead's range, and in this regard, we are particularly concerned about the displacement of the whale due to the industrial noise and the threat of major oil spills. Surely no one would argue that in order to properly manage an animal such as the bowhead, we must have a reasonable understanding of what areas of the marine environment are most important to the whale and why they are important. In general terms, we know that the bowhead's range includes areas of the Bering Sea, Chukchi, the Beaufort Seas. However, there are many details that still elude us. Not the least of these elusive details are such things as, what are the major feeding areas of the bowhead? And what are the limits of the bowhead's wintering range? Without much doubt, major use areas would include the waters used as migratory paths, feeding areas, breeding and calfing areas. It is obvious that major habitat use areas must be identified before they can be adequately protected. Although the identification of these important areas is less precise than necessary, there have been major steps taken in this regard in the United States waters, primarily through the actions of the National Marine Fisheries Service, the Minerals Management Service, and the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission. At this time, I'd like to turn the projector on. Thank you. In order to be more specific concerning the identification and the protection of major habitat use areas of the bowhead whale, I call your attention to at least the following five instances in which we feel further action is essential. Number one, the spring migratory route of the bowhead whale must be more precisely defined and afforded appropriate protection. We are particularly concerned as to the migratory path between Point Hope and Point Barrow, especially regarding the path width and its relationship to the major lead system. The nature of this path must be clarified, especially since the year-round southward tankering of oil and gas is a possibility. Number two, the fall migratory route of the bowhead whale must be more precisely defined and afforded appropriate protection. We are particularly concerned with the area between the Canadian border and Point Barrow. We feel that industrial noise, especially noise due to seismic exploration, has already displaced the fall migration seaward and is thereby interfering with the subsistence hunt at Barrow. This threat due to the industrial noise was noted in resolutions passed during the recent meeting of the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Captains held under auspices of the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission Conference during February. Number three, the bowhead whale feeding area between the Canadian border and Barter Island must be more precisely defined and afforded appropriate protection. Nearly all parties concerned agree that these waters are a feeding area. However, its importance to the population is not clear to us all. We feel that these waters are very important to the whale and should be considered for designation as critical habitat. Our feeling is supported by the finding that whales taken off Coctovic that have recently ingested food in their stomachs and hunters in the area regularly see whales feeding. We're happy to see that the Minerals Management Service, after much urging from the North Slope Borough, is initiating a study of bowhead usage of these waters. We feel that it is especially important that the basic oceanographic processes be identified that allow these waters to be so productive. Needless to say, we will watch this study with great interest. It is our intent to take all steps available to us to protect these waters. Number four, other feeding areas of the bowhead whale must be identified and afforded appropriate protection. Fall migration bowheads have been known to feed in the vicinity of Point Barrow, as well as other less defined areas between Barter Island and Point Barrow. Although feeding by spring migration, bowhead whales have been thought to be insignificant. During the spring of 1982, a bowhead was taken at St. Lawrence Island that had been recently feeding, and two bowheads taken just last week at Barrow had recently ingested food in their stomachs. These instances involving three spring harvested whales clearly show that we have much to learn about the bowhead feeding habits. Number five, steps must be taken at the international level to identify the major feeding areas of the bowhead whale in the Canadian Beaufort Sea and provide for their protection. We are particularly concerned that over the past few years, there have been already movement of the bowhead whales out of the so-called industrialized zone. This apparent displacement should be carefully studied as to the extent and cause. Due to the increasing industrial activity in that area, we feel that the industrial noise must be considered as a possible disturbing influence. In conclusion, let me again state that the industrial activity is increasing over much of the Bowheads Range, and in view of this, we feel that it is essential that high priority be given to the studies in the marine environment that can identify those areas of major importance to the animal. By having the proper information available, our government regulatory agencies will be able to work with the industry so that sensitive habitat areas are not unduly impacted. As Dr. Mosenfeld said in his opening remarks to this conference, the indigenous people of the Arctic are not against development. However, we are united in our stand against development taking place without consideration of our living resources and our culture. We of the Arctic shall continue to work together to ensure the long-term future of our invaluable tradition and our way of life. I appreciate the opportunity to address this distinguished group, and I hope that these comments will help focus additional public awareness upon the Arctic marine environment and our need to move forward in the support of quality science. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much, Mayor, for these most interesting comments. Now, ladies and gentlemen, at the end of this program, it is our particular privilege and pleasure to Dr. Vera Langsner and myself to introduce the President of University of Alaska, Dr. Donald O'Dowd.
Professor Ray, Mayor Amalek, Dr. Alexander, ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be here with you today and to participate in the closing of this conference. I've heard good things about your meeting from various members during the last 3 days, and I hope for all of you it's been a valuable experience. We've been glad to have you in Alaska, in Fairbanks, and certainly at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I figure you're tired. You're eager to get on to other things after 3 full days of discussion and listening and attending to scientific material, so I'm not going to say anything about marine living systems, nothing about science and society, which I'd be tempted to talk about at the beginning, but not at the end of such a conference. Let me share with you some observations about Fairbanks for a moment. I'm new here, so I've had fun seeing how Fairbanks operates this year, and my scientific observations are interesting to me. One thing that's very characteristic of Fairbanks is the higher you go, the warmer it gets, particularly in the winter. Now, most places I've lived, the higher you go, the colder it gets, but that doesn't work in Fairbanks. Fairbanks is oriented so that if you get down in the valley, the cool air pools, and down at the airport, they have a hole, and they have a thermometer 12 feet down in that hole. And all the cold air in the interior of Alaska accumulates there, and that really is what sets the temperature that's ordinarily reported for Fairbanks as the low temperature during the winter. Now, the reason that the Fairbanksans do that is they don't really want a lot of other people to come up here and join them in this idyllic location. So they've managed to generate an average winter temperature a good 15 degrees lower than it really is. So I just want you to know that about Fairbanks. It's interesting also, that really fooled me last fall, that the colder it gets, the better it is in Fairbanks. And for a while this puzzled me, but what happens is, unlike any other place I've ever lived, the ground gets cold, and so when it warms up and things melt, then it forms an ice layer. So in the winter, when it's 10 or 15 or 20 below, the driving isn't bad and the footing's all right. But if it gets up to 20 above, it can get slippery and miserable. So you like it to stay cold and crisp and beautiful in the winter. Something new to me. I hadn't anticipated that. The other thing that I've observed is that it's the only place I've ever lived where the snow melts only from the top of the snow layer, not from the bottom. Now, I've always lived in temperate climates where, you know, in the spring, the ground begins to warm up underneath, So the snow melts from both directions. It goes very quickly, not in Fairbanks. It only melts from one direction, it grows very slowly, and you can see the result of that right around us today. Well, it's a fascinating place. I came here in the summer last year, and they said it would be warm and dry. It was cool and wet. Then they told me the winter would be cold and dry, and it was warm and snowy. And the spring, well, we're still waiting for that, so we haven't decided whether there's going to be one. Well, it's a fascinating city. I'm glad you've come to visit it, and I hope that the hosts have shared with you some of the delights and marvels of the interior of Alaska. A few words about the University of Alaska. It's a system which is a monopoly, incidentally. Essentially, the higher education in the state of Alaska is the responsibility of the University of Alaska. There are two private post-secondary institutions in the nonprofit sector, Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage, about 500, 600 FTE enrollment, and Sheldon Jackson down in Sitka, probably around 400 or 500 students, and then all the rest of the students in the state are students at the University of Alaska. The headcount of about 33,000 and a full-time equivalent of about 13,500. The funding level for that is about $275 million, a total budget, operating budget for the university, which is a substantial budget for that size institution. I was at the State University of New York for the last 5 years with its 380,000 students. In fact, State University of New York's total population, students, faculty, and staff, equals that of Alaska. But I figured if their budget were the same size as the budget of the University of Alaska, they would this year have a $6 billion operating budget. It's about $2 billion, so University of Alaska is fairly well funded. We claim it isn't, naturally, but by some standards, it's in pretty good shape. Well, I've enjoyed learning something about a university. Let me share with you just for a minute or two, and you have four more minutes, according to my Professor Ray, according to my watch, so I'll use them up. What have I found? I found, as I've come to Alaska, and I've been here just a year now, a little under a year, a good university, not a great one, but a good one, very high potential, lots of problems. I suppose when you come to a new institution or a new department or a new college, most everyone finds that. It's a very new university, and probably that is distinctive in comparison with the institutions that most of you are associated with, and a very unformed university in a way. This university really is about 12 to 15 years old in terms of most of what characterizes it today has been built since 1970, and a lot of it since 1975. I found, for example, in a statewide administration, a very great emphasis on financial systems and financial controls, and not only no emphasis on academic activities, but no representation of academic concerns in the administration of the university as a whole, which is an interesting observation and a major problem. The major services of the university, teaching, from what I can see, is very good. Students are unusually favored here. Classes are small. They are taught by faculty members. They're worked very hard. They probably don't like that very much, but they probably learn more than they do at most of the alternative institutions to which most of them would go elsewhere in the country, mainly because they're frequently in classes of 10 or 15. I don't suppose we have many classes over 30 in the whole university. They are not taught by graduate students, though graduate students can be excellent teachers, but they are taught by faculty from their freshman year onward. Support services are excellent, whether it be, we complain all the time that they're inadequate, but the libraries are good. Computing equipment is widely available and in high quality. All whole range of services that ought to undergird an academic program are in good condition and well supplied. Research, for the size of the institution, is obviously very well developed, and you've had a chance to see some of that here with the Institute of Marine Sciences, the Geophysical Institute, Institute of Biological, the Institute of Arctic Biology, and a variety of other areas, Arctic Engineering, Agriculture, Fish and Wildlife, and so on. All of those on the Fairbanks campus developed to relatively high degrees of sophistication. The Anchorage campus is more focused on economic research and related issues, but it too has some strengths, and the Juneau campus is developing a fisheries research capability that I think will be very respectable in a few years. Quality of the staff is good. It's able, but energetic, young, I think basically inexperienced staff across the institution. A good deal of commitment to outreach and a place which has growth in enrollment ahead of it, a population base which is expanding, which is a nice thing to have, and a state funding situation which, though not as healthy as it was a year or two ago, still is good and promising and obviously provides the kind of support that a university needs. So it's an interesting place, has a lot to be done for it. Many, many things that your institutions take for granted don't yet exist here and have to be put in place in the years ahead. And that's a lot of the challenge that people here find, and perhaps some among you will join us one of these days in solving these problems and advancing the fortunes of a promising university. Well, I hope the conference has been fruitful and rewarding for you. Many of you will be on the Denali trip tomorrow, and I suspect that will be a very valuable and exciting experience, and I'll invite all of you to return when you can to this interesting and exciting part of the world. There are always good things going on here, and we look forward to seeing you again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, President, for these closing remarks and the interesting explanations on the Fairbanks life and on the University of Alaska altogether. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the end point of this conference, and we would certainly like, on behalf of the organizers, the Institute of Marine Science of the University of Alaska and the Committee Arctic International, to thank you for your participation, thanking the speakers, of course, thanking also the audience. It has been a very challenging and interesting meeting. We hope that we will get out of it some good and interesting proceedings in a short time. And meanwhile, I would like to wish to all of you a happy stay in Alaska for the remaining of your stay here and a nice way back home. This conference is finished. Thank you.